Yle Podcast.
Hello and welcome to All Points North. It's the show that hopefully helps put the privacy into your data this week. We'll be taking a look at how EU data privacy rules will affect ordinary people as well as small organizations and review the week's news headlines.
This is the All Points North podcast, telling you everything you need to know about Finland this week.
Hello and welcome to this week's All Points North. I'm Denise Wall and my co-presenter this time around is Mark B. Odom. Nice to see you, Mark.
That's a silent B, Denise. Thanks.
Good to know. Our special guest today is Helsinki University law researcher Susanna Lindros-Hovenheimo. Welcome, Susanna.
Thank you.
Now, some of us may remember that new EU data privacy rules take effect from today. Private individuals might have become aware of it at the latest after receiving lots of emails from services they've subscribed to informing them of new privacy policies. Now, these policies are intended to ensure that people know about their right to control their personal information that's collected, how it's used, who it's shared with, and so forth.
I think I should jump in here and explain, try to explain the directive a bit for our listeners who haven't been following the subject that closely. Essentially, GDPR, that's the General Data Protection Regulation, is a set of rules that requires all EU member states to introduce personal data privacy laws. While the EU has always advocated for the privacy of personal data, previously member states could opt to follow those rules or not. Now, however, they have to introduce legislation to protect personal data. Is that about right, Susanna?
Well, not quite.
Well, it's
a good thing we have you here.
Could you please explain a little bit better?
Yes, so we used to have a directive from the EU, and a directive means that it's a piece of law that requires the member states to introduce their own legislation. So this has been the situation until today. The directive have forced member states to introduce regulation about data protection. In that sense, not that much changes. We've had this compelling instrument from the EU already. It's been a directive. And then all member states have drafted their own rules about this following that directive. Now, what really changes now is that we get a regulation which is directly applicable. That means that the EU has made the situation more clear by giving its own rules that apply in all the member states in exactly the same way. So this is the change. It's more harmonization in Europe about these issues. The regulation changes a lot of things. It also gives stronger protection on data protection, new rights, new enforcement instruments, and so on. But that's the real difference, that we used to have a directive where the member states were forced to implement that, but had some leeway. Now we have much less leeway and more harmonization across Europe.
Okay. Now, a lot of people have been framing the GDPR as an opportunity for private citizens to take back control of their personal data. And to me, that sounds like we've never had control. What would you say is the case?
Well, we've had control, but it's been based more on the member states' own legislation. So that's one thing, that different member states have drafted different strength of rights protection here. In Finland, we've had a pretty good situation, I think, so far as well. But now the EU still makes rules, or has now given rules that strengthen that protection even more. But the idea of control has been there for a long time. And the EU court, the highest court in these issues is the EU court. The EU court has also enforced this in its own decision making. So in that sense, things change, yes, but there's not a huge leap, I would say.
Okay. Well, what would you say the difference is going to be for normal end users of web services and websites?
Well, there's some central differences. One is that we get a few more rights. So we now have legislation, for instance, on the right to be forgotten, which is a new right. It came into EU law via a decision that the EU court made. So it appears from there, from praxis, from practical law. And then now it was taken into the regulation. So now it's been written down as law. So that's a concrete example of one new right that we get. So for ordinary people, we get some new rights. We get clarification on the old rights that we already had. So they're better, more clearly drafted in the law. We have, as I said, harmonious protection across the EU. So we don't have to worry about using services in other member states and then not knowing what happens with our data. So that's also one good thing. Other things. The regulation introduces better enforcement. So we get more rights, but we also get the possibility to remain quite passive and still be protected because the regulation is directed also clearly to companies so that they must take action without people asking for it.
Right. Now, it sounds to me that like a lot of our questions are being framed because maybe people don't understand or didn't understand that the rights that they had concerning their the privacy of their personal data. And we'll get back to that a little later on in the discussion. At the moment, the regulations, as you said, means that companies and organizations now have to comply with the EU rules and more consistently across the EU. Our reporter, Zina Iovino, went out and spoke with some of them. And we've heard that it hasn't been so easy for smaller firms and organizations to find out what they need to do. Let's listen to some more.
As of today, organizations are required to inform customers about why they are collecting their data, how it will be used, and with whom it will be shared. In Finland, some foreigners are hard-pressed to find information on GDPR's rules in English. Julie Breton works for Moniheli, an umbrella organization representing more than 100 multicultural associations in Finland.
But there's very little kind of decent material about it online, and there's like some Finnish language material which is not really good. And when it comes to English language, we just have to rely on something else, like some other materials that comes like from the US or the UK, and that's very kind of focused on the like technological side. So it's kind of not really good for small organizations who don't handle like bank data or credit card numbers or this kind of thing. So there's many, many, many questions and not many answers at this point.
The data framework aims to give EU citizens more control over their data while addressing the realities of our digitized world. GDPR supersedes non-binding EU guidelines issued in 1995, back when personal data was not the commodity it is today. Now people regularly volunteer personal information on social networks, but don't necessarily understand it's being passed on to third parties. The new rules empower private individuals to know more about their data. The privacy regime also increases users' powers to opt out or be forgotten.
We're working with a lot of very small volunteer organizations, so who don't have someone working there that can actually spend work time learning about this. And for most of them, many of them don't even know what it's about.
These NGOs are not alone in their bewilderment. A study last month by analytics company SAS found that 93% of global companies are not yet fully GDPR compliant. Jason Levine, who offers GDPR compliance services, weighs in.
I think one of the significant problems is that most companies don't really understand how GDPR is applicable to them. The breadth of the applicability of GDPR is quite daunting, especially for small and mid-sized companies, and they often don't know where to begin. And support resources within member state data protection agencies are quite limited.
Non-compliance comes at a cost. Penalties can run up to 2-4% of turnover or fines of up to 20 million euros.
The structure of GDPR puts the onus on companies to demonstrate compliance. It's sort of a guilty till proven innocent system.
Meanwhile, Breton of Moniheli is just getting started.
We're not even at the implementation phase. We're actually at a phase where we actually try to understand what's going on, because like all the information that and all the guides that came out about the GDPR just are coming out now, a few days before the deadline, even though we should have gotten them half a year ago.
And that was Zina Iovino talking about small businesses and NGOs that have been struggling to comply with the regulation. Just a reminder to the audience, there's more on this story at yle.fi/news. Now, Susanna, is the concern these groups have about a lack of information in English a fair one?
I believe so, yes. I can imagine that it's been hard, especially for smaller companies that don't have the resources to hire someone to do this compliance work. They don't perhaps find the right consultants, or they don't have the means to hire any consultant at all. And if lay people without any legal background are trying to read the regulation itself, that can prove pretty tricky. I don't know about the situation about the language, though, so I don't know how much the Finnish authorities have been able to put out any information in English, that I don't know. But on the other hand, the regulation is the same in all the member states, so the central authorities, like the Commission, for instance, has given all kinds of information, and that's in all the member states' languages. So, but still, I can imagine it's been hard.
Now, some people might argue that organizations have had 2 years to deal with this issue, because we've now come to the end of this two-year grace period since the regulation itself was introduced. What would you say to that?
Yeah, but still, there have been open questions also for lawyers, really, who are experts on this, on specific sort of details on the thing. So, well, I don't know. It's not my place to say whether some companies should have been faster or slower. Everybody does what they can. But there has been a lot of talk about it in the media, so at least I suppose many, both people, companies and public authorities know that it's been coming. Mm-hmm. So in that sense, maybe there has been fair warning.
Mm-hmm. What's the role of Finland's data protection ombudsman in all this?
Pretty huge, yeah. So has been huge during the directive as well. So they are the guiding authorities here in this field of law. They give guidance, which is sort of semi-binding, also legally, and have been so. They can give decisions on disputes and so on. The problem, I think, has been and still is probably that they have a lot of work, and the staff isn't perhaps as huge as they would need. So their resources, Ross, I'm worried about their resources, whether they have enough for the future.
We heard that our own reporter, Zina, had difficulty contacting them for comment, and I guess some of the...
In this report, we've heard as well that some of the organizations that try to reach out for help and guidance with the information in terms of implementing the rules behind the regulation. So they also
their
had
phones
some
must
problems.
Be ringing quite.
Must be, yeah. It must be really, really busy for them. But let's hope they get funding for more people, because they do a really good job.
Mm. Now, one of the things we heard in the report was about the penalty for non-compliance, between 2% and 4% of revenues, or up to 20 million euros, which is quite a hefty sum. One of the things that I'm wondering is, how will the directive be policed in effect?
Well, it will be policed by these European data protection authorities. So there are ones in member states, and then there are the central authorities as well on EU level. So that's a system. And they collaborate in the different member states, which is obviously needed, because most of the big companies operate in all the member states. Mm. So that's what's going to happen. And it's up to these authorities then to police this, even though it's not a criminal thing, so it's not policing, but still, yeah.
I have a quick question. One of the things that I'm wondering is, what is the process for an ordinary individual who feels that some organization or company that they've been involved with has violated their privacy and has violated, has not complied with the regulation, is their first port of call the Data Protection Ombudsman?
Yeah, the national, the one in the member states. Mm. They have various options according to the regulation, but the obvious one is to contact the authority in their own member states. That's the easiest one, I suppose, or the most natural way to go. Or then maybe in some cases, depends on the facts of the case, but it might be obviously wise to contact the company or the authority first and try to figure out what's going on and lodge a complaint with them first or whatever. It depends on the issue.
Mm-hmm. Well, compliance is essential, and there was just this morning, I mean, this was the first day it went into effect, and at least the Los Angeles Times, the newspaper, the online newspaper, was basically shut off to Europe this morning because it said it had not completed the compliance, done its due diligence over the past 2 years, it's known, and it hasn't done it, and it's not available in Europe. And my question is, could this lead to kind of two different internets where maybe we won't do business in Europe? Could that be a possibility, or do you think compliance will become the norm?
That's a huge debate going on right now, and people are trying to sort of speculate on that. And it's all obviously speculation at this moment. We don't know what the companies are going to do. I would say that it depends on the area that the company operates on. It also depends on the size of the company, and obviously it depends on how big a market Europe is for them. So I suppose money talks there. If you want to operate and if you're in Europe, if you want to offer your services to European customers, you have to comply. If some American companies feel that they have enough in the US so they can just work there, do their stuff there, then fine. They don't have to comply because then they're under their own national legislation. But it depends so much on what the company does and what kind of business model it has and what the product is. If the product is something like social media, well, most of the bigger ones want to operate in Europe. And now we're seeing this so-called Brussels effect taking place, that it's really now Europe driving the global level of protection, because most companies see it beneficial for economic purposes to operate in Europe, and then it's cheaper for them to use the same rules throughout their operations on a global level, and then those rules will be the EU's because they are the most stringent. Mm. So that's what the Brussels effect is about. It's a term coined in legal research. But it really shows what's going on, that sometimes the EU gets this huge global role because it's beneficial for the companies to follow the higher standards. And then it's easy to follow that one standard throughout their operations. So that's one possibility. But as I said, it really depends on what the company does and so on. And one more thing. We do talk a lot about companies often when we talk about this regulation, but it is interesting also to note that it applies to public authorities just as well. So all the public authorities in Finland, for instance, well, not all of them, but most of them have to be compliant as well. Mm. So we're not only talking about businesses here, we're talking about all kinds of organizations who deal with our personal data. And often the organizations that have most data about us tend to be the public authorities, or at least used to be that way. So they were, for instance, health organizations, the public health organizations.
Or the Finnish Road Transport Authority, Trafi, but we'll get on to talking about Trafi and our data later on in the program.
Medical records are already protected.
Already protected, yes. And here,
also outside of the EU.
In the EU, it's really the old directive that has created that legal situation where medical records are extra protected. And the regulation continues that. Mm-hmm. So the regulation upholds the old distinction between normal personal data and then sensitive personal data. Medical records are sensitive personal data, and they will be regulated even more strongly as they have been so far as well. So there's extra protection for that kind of data.
Mm. Well, there's varying degrees of what's considered personal data in Europe, even in among different countries, like in Finland, or for example in Germany, the Google Maps, the street scenes, they have to blur out most of the the structures, even not just people or signposts or but actual buildings.
Yeah, Germany is a nice example. Germany is usually for us privacy lawyers and privacy researchers the most interesting example because they have a history of taking privacy very seriously, and obviously that history stems from the national history of those various authorities and regimes that haven't perhaps been so privacy compliant. So yeah, Germans are really, really strict on privacy protection. But as I said, the regulation is now meant to level the playing field so that all the member states should have one set of standards, which is also meant to make it easier for European companies to operate so that we have the single digital market that's beneficial for the European economy. That there's also that aim here, that it would be easier for companies to operate across member state borders.
Yes.
We'll see how that goes. But yeah, that's one of the aims.
So it sounds like a clear move to harmonize all of the structures and all of the legal codes to help make doing business better and easier within the EU. And as you said, that redounds to the benefit even of organizations operating outside the EU so that once they get into the market, it's so much simpler to operate throughout the bloc.
Exactly. And it's really good for people as well. So the data subjects, as we call them, the people whose fundamental rights are now protected in the same way in all the member states.
We got to cut it off here. I guess we could talk about this for another half hour, but we got to move it forward because it's time now for our listener questions. Now, in the prelude to this regulation finally taking effect today, we ran a story about how it probably won't prevent Finnish companies from selling users' data. Needless to say, some members of our audience were quite upset about the current practice where organizations like the Finnish Transport Safety Agency, Trafi, sells customers' personal contact data. Here are some comments from our friends on Facebook. Spencer Watts says, as soon as I got a mobile phone in Finland, I started getting sales calls relating to my address. He didn't seem happy there. And Susan Tunkarik chimed in with, telephone cold callers in Finland are terrible. I block the numbers, but there's always plenty more.
So it seems that thanks for that, Mark.
I tried to recreate the emotions.
I could picture these irate individuals talking about this issue. It seems that some people are really tired of this kind of direct marketing that is based on their information being traded like a commodity out there in some markets. Is it true that people can still expect to receive cold calls and unsolicited emails from companies looking to peddle their goods and services, as that story Mark referred to on our website suggested?
Well, it goes against the spirit of the regulation, that's for sure. But it goes against the spirit of the previous directive as well.
How is it that Trafi has been able to do this? I mean, the previous directive was introduced quite some time ago, and as far as I know, I haven't opted out of the Trafi system. How is it possible that they're still able to trade my...
I'm sorry, I should have looked into this case. I have really no idea of the facts. I don't even have a car, so I really don't know what we're talking about here. But as far as I can tell, you have the opt-out. Haven't you had the opt-out possibility so far as well? I don't know. I should be able to look now into what they are offering.
Yes, I think that I do, but I think the issue is that many people don't know that they can opt out.
They find out
when they get irate, and then they contact Trafi, and Trafi says...
Well, I don't think people know that data is being provided by whoever. I mean, they just think, oh, well, I'm just getting junk mail or spam or whatever.
Could well be.
Real quick, will the GDPR stop Finland from publishing people's tax information?
Good question. That is a really good question. That's our Finnish speciality. That's that tax thing. It has been so much debated in the EU court and even in the European Court of Human Rights. There are cases about the Finnish publication of tax data.
I understand that it's not just a Finnish thing, it's a Nordic thing as well.
Maybe so, yes. I'm only well aware with the Finnish version of it. That's a tricky thing, actually, because on the one hand, if the media have a good reason to publish some people's tax data, then that goes on under freedom of speech and freedom of journalism. And that's pretty important, too. So if you have a reason to publish somebody's tax data, for instance, a public figure or a politician or someone, then the GDPR doesn't really change that. Mm. But otherwise, if there's no journalistic freedom, then I guess the situation is really, really different. If it's ordinary people's personal data, then that becomes much more tricky. Mm.
I guess it's a question here of balancing the different freedoms and different rights.
Well, even when a private person commits a crime or is convicted, they're not generally named in Finland in the press.
No,
it has to be a pretty high bar for them to be mentioned, and it's usually because they're a public figure, and already in the media.
I think one of the conventions, certainly that's used here at ULE, is if there's a conviction, then the person's name becomes public. But before a conviction, there is no reporting on that. And coming back to the question of the tax data, certainly I am not aware of any of the public figures whose tax data have been published in Finland having complained about it. They seem to just roll with the punches and take it as par for course here in Finland, as part of just the way we do things here.
Yeah, we have a long tradition of this principle of public knowledge. Like, the different legal cultures in the member states play a role here. It would be unspeakable in other member states to publish tax data, but in Finland and in all the Nordic countries, I suppose, we have this idea that we as a community kind of we have a right and we have an interest to know what's going on around us and what other people are up to, in a way. There's this principle of public knowledge.
And I think that there's a high premium placed on transparency overall.
That too, yeah.
If you have something on your mind, just send your audio message to our All Points North WhatsApp account. Our WhatsApp number is +358 44 421 0909. Tell us what's on your mind, and your comment or question might be heard on our next show.
And now it's time for a look at some of the other stories that made news headlines this week. First up, Prime Minister Juha Sipilä said this week that Finland has no plans to imitate neighboring Sweden and issue national guidelines for crisis and war situations. Sweden mailed out a 20-page pamphlet to the country's nearly 5 million households. It contained instructions such as how to find bomb shelters, locate clean water and food, and other emergency tips.
Interior Minister Kai Mykkänen has admitted that Finland needs to do more to employ immigrants. He was responding to criticism from Finn's party chair Jussi Halla-aho of government's track record in getting migrants already in Finland into the job market. Mykkänen called for tighter integration policy, which he said makes immigrants passive.
Now, state rail company VR has backed down from its previous position and agreed to sell an old engineering site in Helsinki's Vallila district to ex-US ambassador Bruce Orek. The price tag on the deal was 11 million euros, and Orek says he has plans to transform the property into Helsinki's version of Camden, which is a charming open-air market in London.
Still on the diplomatic scene, Finland finally has a new US ambassador. Robert Pence. The new head of mission is a wealthy businessman, a Republican campaign donor, and a literary scholar. However, he's no relation to U.S. Vice President Mike Pence. Before the appointment, the Helsinki post had been vacant for nearly a year and a half.
Let's have a look at some tech news. It seems that this year's Millennium Technology Prize was awarded to Finnish physicist Dr. Tuomo Suntola. He received the award for his innovations in nanoscale technology, which enables the use of microprocessors in high-tech products like smartphones and computers. The 1 million euro prize is awarded every 2 years.
Meanwhile, Swedish and Finnish university researchers have developed a biofuel that could replace gasoline and diesel. They claim the new fuel has higher octane levels than regular petrol or diesel. The head researcher says the scale and cost of producing the biomass-based fuel is considerably cheaper than setting up an oil refinery.
And one more innovation item this time. A Finnish startup is turning heads with women's swimwear made from fishing nets and other plastic waste recovered from the ocean. The venture is the brainchild of two young design students. The operation isn't entirely finished, though, as the swimsuits are made in Indonesia out of recycled material that's manufactured in Italy.
In other news, there was a social media hurricane earlier this week when an unleashed pit bull reportedly killed a smaller dog in Helsinki. The pit bull's owner had been at work at a restaurant and left the animal free to wander around. The incident sparked a fierce debate on dog owners' duties to keep their animals on the leash, according to public order laws. And don't forget, you can read more on these and other stories on our website at yle.fi/news.
Thanks for that, Mark. Well, I can't believe it, but we've come to that point in the show where we have to say our goodbyes. But before we do that, let's talk a bit about the weekend. I'm not sure yet if I can make it, but I heard that the World Village Festival, otherwise known as Maailma Kylässä, begins tomorrow in Helsinki from about midday. At any rate, it'll run until Sunday evening, and of course there'll be stands with all kinds of things to see and eat, as well as musical performances and talk shops. What about you, Mark?
Well, Denise, I think I'll head over to Turku for the weekend for the International Video Art Festival. It began Wednesday and ends on Sunday. It's the third year the event is being held, and visitors can choose from an array of different events and short films. Many of the videos are only a few minutes long, but I'm curious about a piece by Benjamin Orlo called Horses and Ants, and it's billed as a 24-hour-long opera dance video.
Wow.
Which combines footage shot in the Finnish army with opera and dance. Sounds good.
Sounds
Susanna?
Interesting.
Well, Susanna,
perfect.
You want to come to Turku with me?
Perhaps.
What are you going to do this weekend?
I don't know. Maybe Turku, but probably anything that has to do something with the outdoors.
I see you looking out through
yeah,
the window.
Yeah, looking out the window. Yes. It's so nice out there.
Absolutely. Let's make the most of this weather
yes.
while it lasts.
Yeah.
Well, on that note, it's time for us to wrap up this week's program. I'm Denise Wall, and my co-presenter this week was Mark. I'm going to say it out loud. B.
Silent. Silent.
Thanks to our special guest, Susanna Lindros-Hovinheimo, for stopping by. Our producer today was Lydia Taylorson, reporter was Zina Iovino, and our sound engineer was Jarno Valkonen. Thanks for joining us, and don't forget to subscribe, get in touch, and even leave a review wherever you get your podcasts. You can stay up to date at yle.fi/news and listen to previous editions of our show at yle.fi/allpointsnorth.
You've been listening to All Points North, a podcast produced by Yle News, a unit of the Finnish Broadcasting Company. For daily news from Finland in English, head to yle.fi/news and follow us online at Facebook, Twitter and Instagram. You've been listening to Yle News.